Hey everyone, this is Mankini from Three Sides of the Groin. That's the left nut, right nut, and me, the taint. You know, my eraser's well worn, because I make a lot of mistakes. But not as many mistakes as those clowns at Cobras and Fire. Their mission statement, Rock's not dead, wrong. Manson declared it dead as far back as 1998.
Manson wants your children. No, not that one. We mean the shock rock star, Marilyn Manson.
You know, the Bible says that one day every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. I mean, Marilyn Manson will confess that Jesus is Lord. The devil will confess.
Well, you know, I've got an idea. Why don't we let... John, why don't you pray for Marilyn Manson?
Lord, I just lift up Marilyn Manson to you right now.
With the new CD, Mechanical Animals, welcome to the new look and new sound of the always controversial Marilyn Manson.
I think spirituality exists mostly in art and in music, and the last place you're going to find it is in religion. I think churches has very little to do with spirituality. I think it's something you have to find in yourself. It's about expressing your deepest fears and your emotions and putting it in something.
He named himself for a tragic screen legend and an infamous spree killer.
Manson attempts to push buttons, so he'll do whatever he has to do to provoke.
And I guess in 79 they outlawed lunchboxes because they said that they were a weapon. The only one that I actually saved as a kid was this Kiss one. And I wasn't allowed to take it to school. At Christian school, because they said that, you know, knights in Satan's service.
He's Satan. He worships Satan. You know, how can you go to one of his concerts?
Some communities banned Manson, mortified by what they viewed as his blasphemy and obscenity.
Marilyn Manson's message is loaded with lyrics that promote hate, bitterness, rage. He is a Pied Piper driving a wedge between parents and teens.
Usually people hate what they're afraid of. It's in the classic story. I think that even kind of goes back to Jesus, you know. They were afraid and didn't understand him, so they killed him. If I found Jesus, which I didn't know he was lost in the first place, if I did, I don't think he would probably be that much different than me, you know. He's a long-haired guy that likes to, you know, dress sexy.
You know, Jesus and I have a lot in common. For one, Jesus loved potato chips. He's also a music fan. There's countless paintings of him wearing a Kiss and Ted Nugent t-shirt tucked into his loincloth. Jesus Christ, potato chips are good. I gotta get another bag.
Manson's one of those people who's really essential for society. It's really important to have somebody who shakes up conservative organizations and is a hero of a 12-year-old.
The way the world reacted to Antichrist Superstar was just as much a part of my creation as the music itself.
Like Antichrist Superstar, Mechanical Animals has a parental warning sticker and won't be sold by the Walmart and Kmart retail chains. The Target chain does carry stickered CDs, but has banned Manson's because of so-called nudity on the cover.
Marilyn Manson's new album, Mechanical Animals, is supposed to be really scary and shocking. Ooh, right from the cover, where he looks like this androgynous alien, and right down to song titles like, I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me. In fact, there is something really deeply shocking about the album. It's actually pretty good.
Human, but if we cry, we will run. Yeah. anything at all.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. I'm Gene, and I'm joined by the mechanical loose cannon and the dopey Baco.
What the hell's going on here, man?
I don't understand, Gene. You've been here for a couple hours, and you think you're part of the crew insulting us on our own show?
And now you're like you're leading the intro here?
I mean, what are you, some type of bully?
I'm not like, welcome to the Disciples of the Watch. I'm the lead singer of Mortificator.
Yeah, and go fuck yourself. I don't think that's how that's how we would appear on your show. But maybe that's just you. Maybe that's just the Minnesota way. Where the hell are you in Minnesota? What's the town?
Shakopee.
Okay, that's what I thought. Exactly. That's the attitude there. I understand. But
it's a tough guy town.
Yeah.
It's a tough guy town.
It's a tough guy town.
Shakopee.
It's all about fucking horse racing and fair rides.
Anything else you want to say, Gene, now that you introduced us and insulted us? Please continue.
It smells weird in here.
Yeah, it does. Okay. Yeah.
See, it's not the it's difficult to be the host, right? You get you get all the pressure, you get everything going on. You have to be the organizer, the brains, the operation. Actually, that last part would be pretty easy for you.
You know nothing about podcasting.
You don't, man.
Except for the 100 to 200 shows you've done podcasting.
Yeah, except for that, you know nothing.
Well, let's we're at the last episode of the Three Hits from Hell. Why don't we take a second to actually acknowledge the contributions Gene Vogel has made?
I really just want to throw you a compliment, and that is that I really enjoyed the whole Ripe Rock episode too that we did.
Yeah, it was a good
couple
time.
Months
that was
back.
A good show.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of banter going back, a lot of songs that I'd never heard before, and an Overkill song that I actually enjoyed. So thank you very much.
Nice. Well, thank you.
I enjoyed that episode very much myself.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, spread the love, people. Listen to other podcasts. Again, we'll say it one more time. Disciples of the Watch. Check it out. Are you going to push this forward, or are we going to keep going around the circle?
Of course we are. This is your pick, Luce. We are at the end of Three Hits of Hell. What is the third hit from hell that you chose?
Yes. So I chose this one. I bounced around to a lot of different things. Things actually seem very threatening, like Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile, just to torment you people from a 2-hour album or 2.5-hour album. But no, what I decided on was I was like, what album has a lot of background and history and things like that and is one that I really enjoy, and that is Marilyn Manson's Mechanical Animals that came out in 1998. September 15th, 1998, in fact.
Ooh, so Gene's birthday.
That's right, Gene's birthday, yeah. So before we get into the album, I think we'd like to do like a roundtable of how we got into Manson. May I start with me, Bucko? Is it okay? I always like to ask for permission.
Sure.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that. So I became aware of Manson with probably like most people, and that is the cover of Sweet Dreams Are Made of These back in, I think, 1995, and didn't really hit me that much. And then Beautiful People came out. I liked that song okay, but it wasn't until Mechanical Animals that was actually the first Manson album that I purchased. But I remember up to this point, though, and we'll go into this back and forth here, that there was a 4-year period, 4 or 5 year period that he had almost, I don't think coincidentally, like Alice Cooper had, where he actually had mystique and he actually seemed dangerous and he didn't know, is it an act or is he actually this crazy and things of that nature, where I will say right now that Manson officially is the last person that pulled off the shock rock thing effectively. Until maybe Ghost, maybe a smidgen of time for Ghost, but not even completely. But before the internet really hit, before you even knew it was real, and we'll go into all that kind of thing, but that was what really intrigued me about him, because you didn't know if he was real or fake. He wasn't like Alice Cooper, where he went and played golf after going on stage. I'll throw it to you, Gene.
Boy, my experience with Manson has been extremely limited. Beautiful People, of course, off of Antichrist Superstar was I think my first interaction. I know there was an album before that, but I don't know if I really heard anything off of that one.
You didn't hear the Sweet Dreams cover?
I did eventually. Yes,
but prior, I'm saying.
I don't know if it was prior, actually.
Okay,
but it was a really sketchy timeline as far as what was going on with me personally, with me musically, and with what you know Marilyn Manson was doing, of course. But after, of course, Antichrist Superstar, he was very much out there in the public eye. I mean, that album right. just really blew him up for everybody. And I for me, I kind of just stayed away from it. I don't know if it was because I thought this wasn't for me or if it was just this weird dude just trying to be weird for the sake of being weird. It, you know, like Bach, Luce, you were saying, was it real or was it fake? And I just wasn't really interested in investing any time into it, so I just kind of let it slide. And, you know, some of his fans may have been part of the reason for that, too. You know, some people may have turned me off to it just with their craziness. And everybody decided they needed to put these things in their eyes and these...
I never saw the context, but I know what you're speaking of. So, okay. Baco?
You know, the weird thing is that, like, I knew the name Marilyn Manson before I heard Sweet Dreams. And oddly enough, when I heard that, I'm like, I wonder if this is Marilyn Manson. And it turned out it was. I don't know why. It just seemed like that song sounded like what Marilyn Manson should sound like. But yeah, Beautiful People was probably the first song that I actually enjoyed. But I knew hearing it that, like, I don't want that record. I just like that song. I don't need to hear that. It's odd because you said it, Lewis. Same for me. Mechanical Animals was the first record by Marilyn Manson I bought. And I bought Antichrist Superstar, you know, like retro after that. And, you know, rightfully so, because Mechanical Animals is a much better record. But I will echo exactly what you were saying. This was the last protested rock star. Legitimately protested. Like, it actually struck fear in people. It actually kind of had that resonation that, like, the Beatles, Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Led Zeppelin, Kiss, Alice Cooper, that during those times did. Motley Crue is probably the last one before Marilyn Manson. Where it was like this, like, cultural thing. It wasn't just like this one band. It was like, this is poisoning our children. And parents and religious groups would come out and they'd fight against them even performing. So,
right. And also it was interesting how high and how quickly his Antichrist star status fell, because by like 2001, I remember you guys are all familiar about the Onion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember there's some article that is still in my favorite. Is it says Marilyn Manson now going door to door trying to shock people, like a salesman and stuff like that. Well, he'd become a joke by the early 2000s.
I think joke's a little too strong.
I don't think so, because if the music. Yeah. All right, fine. His shock reign, let's just say, was over.
Oh,
like
clearly.
You finally saw through the reality.
I don't know if it saw through. It just went away. I don't know that there was anything to see through. You know what I mean? I think see through is too strong a term. It's like you're implying that people who actually gave a shit and went out and protested this crap suddenly decided, oh, it's not as bad as I thought. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Those people aren't that smart.
Cops and queers, to swim you have Show. We're all stars now in the Dope Show.
So let me break it down this way before we go into the record.
Sure.
This is a statistic that I was not aware of until I started doing my homework for this episode, and that is that he had such an impact, I guess, culturally and publicity-wise, that from Antichrist to Mechanical Animals, this album actually debuted number one on the Hot 100. I'm not talking about just album on rock charts. I'm talking about it debuted number one, which blows me away that that is how impactful he was
to get to that status. I clearly remember that.
Yeah. Do you remember that at all, Gene?
Oh,
Would you have thought that was a real fact? Okay.
This is Manson at his height. This was big time, man.
Yeah. So this is the thing too that I found it very interesting about this album is, you know, he went from, I mean, he had the whole, you know, Devil, all that stuff, Antichrist, Superstar on the first album. He could have easily just sailed on that. But what he decided, which I thought was very interesting, was the fact that he realized that in America, you know what's scary? Yeah, Satan's scary. You know what's scarier? Drugs. And that was his whole thing, is he like drugs and sexuality. And he went from the complete like evil to an androgynous alien type weird, like, I remember like, that is so odd looking. What is he doing? And then he like on his tour, the last tour on Earth, on the background, like a Kiss logo, he just had the word drugs. And it was, then he had the whole, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but do you know who the author of his autobiography is?
No.
Neil Strauss, who's the same author of The Dirt, who's the same author of many rock biographies, but that then he had this whole persona of...
What's that called? Something about the road to hell?
Yep, long road out of hell, and that was all like... it turns out to be most of it was bullshit, is revealed later, but it completely added to his whole mystique. Yeah. So he had all these things going all the time. And then right after Mechanical Animals came out... is when where I work now in Littleton, Colorado, is where Columbine happened. And I'll just end it with this before we go to the album. We're talking about somebody that then parlayed that evilness into actually being featured on the next kind of controversial person in the United States being or the world being Eminem. He was on The Way I Am on that album after it. So I'm just saying he kept adding and adding to this, which finally went away. But he was the target, the personified evil of rock.
You know, the one thing that comes to mind for me with Marilyn Manson was I remember I was at my grandmother's house and she was watching one of those shows that grandmothers watch, Donahue or whatever it was. And
Golden Girls.
There was a father from South Dakota.
Mama's Family?
No, it was a talk show.
Oh, sorry.
And there was a father... Maury. From South Dakota, if I remember correctly, and his son had killed himself, and he was railing against Marilyn Manson. He said, you know, my son came to me one day and he had this album in his hand. He's like, Dad, I really want you to listen to this album. And he's like, and I didn't listen to it, and I wasn't worried, didn't want to get involved in that music and stuff, and now my son is dead. And I just remember thinking, motherfucker, the reason your son is dead is because you never listened to your fucking kid. It wasn't because he was listening to Marilyn Manson, because he came to you with something that was important to him, and he's like, I want to share this with you, Dad, and you didn't have a fucking minute to spare for him. So that's why your son is dead. It's not because of Marilyn Manson, because you didn't give him the time. And maybe there's other factors with, maybe there was a chemical imbalance or something like that. But step one is get involved with your fucking kid. Don't blame Marilyn Manson. Blame yourself. Start there, because if you had been there for your kid, maybe you would have seen the warning signs. And I wasn't a Marilyn Manson fan when this all went down. This is because this is pre-Mechanical Animals.
Okay.
And I, but I just remember being pissed off, and my grandma just looking at me like, "See what heavy metal does?" And I'm just like, "Do you see what being a parent who isn't involved in his kid's life does?" Just remember when you think you're free, the crack inside your fucking heart is me.
There is something to the idea, you know, and I'll make a weird comparison for you. Blink-182 just had this way of writing songs that, like, resonated with these latchkey kids. Marilyn Manson connected with a lot of people, but a big core of that audience was depressed teenagers.
Yeah.
You know, like people that didn't feel like anybody cared or listened to them. People who got picked on or bullied at school. And, of course, the whole Columbine thing ties into that, and that's why he got dragged into that garbage. But you're right. It's just, it really isn't about the music. It's like what's happening before they decide this music speaks to me.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like, the Marilyn Manson was designed specifically for those that have a chemical imbalance. I can smell my own.
Wow.
No, but in all seriousness, like, I see what Gene's saying. Yeah, serious and stuff like that. But it did, like, go into that. This album specifically, I think, kind of went away from that a little bit, where it was going big time into kind of just the culture in general and not being the evil guy, but kind of almost being social commentary in a way with what was going on.
I think this was kind of a brave mood, considering what he was coming from.
Yep.
Musically. It's like this is actually a much bigger shift in style than I think I realized at the time. But that, looking back, it makes sense because this is the first record I bought.
And oddly, this is probably the best-selling and least popular with his hardcore fans, because he immediately flipped back to the evil guy with the next couple albums. Okay. So in summary, like we were saying before, because Gene likes both time and he also likes dates, so this one is really special to him because this came out on September 18th, 1998, which is Gene's birthday.
Happy birthday, Gene. I got my fingers up my spleen.
Go ahead. Next.
No, keep going. I want to hear the next verse.
No, that's all I got.
Well, I think it's time to get into the record that you chose, which is Marilyn Manson Mechanical Animals, which is almost portrayed as two different records with seven songs each. Lewis, you want to kick this off?
Yeah, I mean, the album kicks off with a great big white world, and this is not my favorite track on the album. It's a great opener. I will say this much for critical thought on this. The majority of this album, each song, I think, suffers from Alice in Chains syndrome, which is they extend the songs about a minute and a half too long. This song is a great track, but if it was at 3 minutes and 34 seconds, you like that time? It would be much better than the 4 minutes and 57 seconds.
Of course, you think that.
But it doesn't need another verse chorus at the end.
That 3:45 mark. Loose Cannon wants you to fucking call it quits.
That's it. You don't need any more. It takes away.
Loose Cannon's in the studio, like waving his arm at 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Well, wrap it up, fuckers. We got to fade out.
I don't like fade outs either. It has to end. I hate.
Oh my god, we gotta fucking slap it in tight.
This album is 62 minutes. Could be at 47. That's all I gotta tell you. But let's go back to this solid opening track. Your thoughts, Baco?
Love it, Gene.
The sharp and sweet. So for me, I have to admit that as the album begins, I'm a little bit thrown off by this one. It's somewhat simple yet not unappealing. There's almost a little bit of a Depeche Mode vibe going on. There's some good movements within the song. Keeps things interesting for the most part. Solo break works well with the track. Could be a little bit shorter for a pop metal song. I'm right there with you, Luce. I give this one a 7.
Yeah.
So we'll go to the next track, which was how you described me. Is that correct, Gene? Dopey?
No, that was...
It's
that a coin was flip. Me.
It was a coin flip. You're both dopey.
This song is about...
I'm the idiot stepbrother.
Yeah, this song is about the show that one of the Doors from Snow White would put on. but no, this song is... I mean, you talk about an opposite, like complete departure from Antichrist. This is just a straight up, pretty much a pop song and stuff like that. But it kind of is like the Truman Show or whatever. Like there's just the TV idiot box dope show, that kind of thing. I've always liked this one. I like actually the pre-chorus a lot better than the whole like we're all. Do the thing, Paco.
We're all stars now in the dope show.
Yeah, that part is decent, but I love the chorus when it revs up.
Lots and, of pretty, pretty ones.
Wanna get you high. Yeah, that part sells it for me. But yeah, I think this is the first single, if I remember right.
It is.
Yeah.
So this is a song actually I do remember hearing on the radio, or somehow it came into my world, but that was, of course, a long time ago. And I wasn't sure if I'd recognize any songs on this album, actually. So as soon as I pulled up the track listing, I'm like, oh, okay, I remember Dope Show. It feels like it lacks a little bit in substance other than the lyrical content. I don't mind it, but I think I prefer the previous song over this one. And I do like how it fades into the other track, all of Rick Rubin, though. 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10.
Yeah, you know, you can actually bust our balls more on this. I was hoping you would do the reverse on Ice to Earth, have revenge. No?
Let Gene be Gene.
All right, fine. Fair enough. Are we going to the next one?
No, I haven't fucking talked in this at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Baco.
This is what it's like, okay?
Well, it seemed like you were just passing.
What do you mean it seemed like I was passing?
Well,
I
asked, the order was...
This is now the second time I've asked if I could talk on this song.
No,
and
because
you're like,
the order was...
It seemed like
the order
were passing. Oh,
Jesus Christ. The order was supposed to be me, you, then Gene on this one, as I understood. When I threw it to you, you just said, give it to Gene.
No, so actually, you threw it to Gene, and I said, I thought he already went.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, go listen to the fucking tape. You never kicked it to me.
Baco, your thoughts.
I love this song. I love the simplicity of it. I think it delivers on a level that Gene isn't really appreciating here. It is, you're right, there's not a lot of depth to it, but the way it just says something, it's almost like, this is like Sammy Hagar, but Sammy is talking about drugs, and that's... nothing else. You know what I mean? This is how Sammy would describe drugs and be positive about it. Like, you know, he would be like, we're all stars now in the dope show. It's just perfect.
Yeah. I mean, really, you can really hear that. I mean, the dope show is pretty much a rewrite of Mos Tequila.
I was thinking I'll Fall in Love Again, but I think you made the same point.
So the next track we got here is the title track, Mechanical Animals. And this may be, it might be tied for my favorite song on the album. And yeah, love this track. When I went back to listen to it, I hadn't heard it in years when I listened to the album full. And the, you know, the lyrics, I was a hand grenade that never stopped exploding. You were automatic and hollow as the Owen God. Maybe that's cheesy. For some reason, it works in the song for me. And yeah, this song just works from beginning to end. And you know what? It's under 4 minutes. So it's a winner for me.
I don't think it's cheesy at all.
Yeah? You don't think it's faux evil? That's such an interesting lyric.
I think he does a great job of, like, even like, because we just talked about like the Dope Show thing, right?
Yeah.
I think he does a great job of selling these things in a way that is like believable yet unbelievable, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Agreed. I don't think anybody else could pull that line off.
Listening back to this song in preparation for doing this tonight, I forgot how much I like this record. This is the point where I realized, oh my God, I remember now. I really think this is a good album. Yeah, I'm with you, Luce. This might be, I don't know. I know it's a hit. Dope Show will probably always be my favorite tune on here. And I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me might be my second favorite tune. This has to be pretty much in contention with being the next favorite. So,
cool. Gene?
Mechanical Animals, right out of the gate, I really like the opening riff. However, that's short-lived as the song progresses. It becomes somewhat stale in comparison. It's not too shabby as it moves along, but the lyrical portions I find can't live up what the intro set up. This one falls flat a little bit, 5 out of 10.
Cool. I do want to say, too, that I didn't talk about this earlier. I think the name for a band and, in general, a rock name, Marilyn Manson, is genius. Just the fact that it takes, I mean, it's. I know that it's pretty obvious where it's from, but from Marilyn Manson to Charles Manson, combining those two things is almost like the whole androgynous evil thing of Mechanical Animals. So I've just always think that was a great name.
Yeah, I don't know that I... It's not my cup of tea, but I get what you're going with, and I definitely agree with you.
I should say that there is a theme, too, through this, and that is that just like Iced Earth, this is a Florida band. Florida band.
Yeah, hey, Florida band. There you go.
So, it again.
And Chuck Biscuits wanted to go to Florida once.
He went to Disneyland once, so there's a connection there. He actually was in the sun once. Yeah, so you want to move on to the next?
Of course, track 5.
Okay. No, track 4.
Track 4.
Track 4. We got Rock is Dead. Yes?
It's not, but yeah, I love the song.
Right. So
Gene Simmons has quoted this title quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this much. This is my favorite song on the album. And it's interesting how it was for a single. So this did not actually hit, I guess, fame until it was featured in the outro credits or on the soundtrack of The Matrix. I'm not sure if you know that. It came out like a year after the album.
I didn't even know it ever hit fame at all.
It did for, yeah, well, it was on the radio plenty, mostly from the, you never heard it on the radio, Gene? No?
I did. I'm right there with you, Luce. I remember this from the soundtrack and hearing it on the radio.
Okay, so this is the one that
make me look like a dick, man.
If I was going to take one song and just say, this is Marilyn Manson, it's not The Beautiful People, it's this song.
Everywhere, sell all the living for more safe and dead.
Excellent song. It's the anti theme for our show. Rock is not dead, but Gene or Baco, you're next.
Well, rock is. I mean, it's delivered in a certain. I don't know. What do they call that? Oxymoronic sense.
Moronic.
Moronic. Yes.
You know, Baco. It's pretty much, you know, these days it's simple monkeys with alien babies, amphetamines for boys, and crucifixes for the ladies, which is kind of nice. You know, here's a crucifix for the ladies.
Great lyrics.
Fuck all your protests and put them in bed. What say you? God is on the TV, by the way, if you turn it on. Gene?
Well, like I mentioned before, yeah, this one I am familiar with as well. I think maybe this is the last of the songs I'm familiar with going into reviewing this album with you guys. This is not a bad track. I'm surprised that this one gets as much. I'm actually surprised it gets as much attention as it does, which apparently is opposite of what Baco's been dealing with. This has some elements that vibe with the Beautiful People in it that I'm hearing. Then it's
definitely
one of his most notable tracks, and that might be why. This one I gave a 7 out of 10.
Very nice. Excellent. And what is the length of time on this one?
309 is what I have listed.
Excellent. Just want to make sure you're on point. Okay. I wonder if, by the way, just curious, are you like Rain Man with the length of songs? Like if I threw a song at you right now, could you get it within 10 seconds if I threw a song title at you, just randomly? Can I try?
I'm sure I can come up with a number within less than 10 seconds, yes.
Okay, here we go. Smoke on the Water.
2 minutes.
2 minutes? There's no way.
Well, I threw a number out. It was less than 10 seconds, right?
No. I meant within 10 seconds of the actual track length, Gene. Maybe I should explain the rules better. Can we try this again? Yes or no?
Go for it.
Space Truckin'.
2 minutes.
You were incorrect again. You were terrible.
What are you talking about? That was under 10 seconds, dude.
It doesn't matter. You're fucking this whole thing up. I want to know, what's the length of Space Truckin' by Deep Purple?
He tried, man.
All right, let's move on. You're terrible at games.
Okay, smart guy, what is it?
Well, I didn't look it up yet. Yeah, I was waiting for your answer.
3 seconds, morons. Both of you, get your head out of your asses.
Yeah, if I could just kind of open this up, I really don't want to go through this track by track. It's
because you picked a record you hate, right?
Yeah, I will tell you this much too. Like I said, like Manson, this is my favorite album by him. I don't love the entire thing. In fact, I want to just go do a rant on Manson in general. This is where I think Manson lost it. The first song that he got famous from, you know, the cover of Sweet Dreams, he did what I will call the Manson croon. The whole ring, ring, wah, 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 wah. Now, what?
These.
So.
My.
Disagree.
Danzig's idiot stepbrother.
There's a lot of idiot stepbrothers in this. Wait, he is the idiot stepbrother of the guy from Iced Earth's cousin who ends up being Danzig's nephew. So the whole thing about this though is that he took himself, like on this album he actually sang for the most part, but then he did these things like Marilyn Manson has done probably 15 covers and all of them are useless. You hate covers for the most part, Baco. There's the only difference between the original and Manson's version is the Manson croon. You take.
I don't like. Actually, let me just jump in here.
Sure.
I don't like pretty much any of his covers. I think Sweet Dreams is the pinnacle. But I don't agree that the only difference is him going, I'm Marilyn Manson.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that's where he lost it, is he just kind of got lazy in all these like the next album, he has three
drinks. Well, he drinks a lot of absinthe.
Oh, so that's what it is. That's how you vocally warm up.
By the way, track. What are you more likely to have an adult offer you, a whippet or absinthe?
I'm going to go with the absinthe.
God, they're both pretty fucking like, man, you want your mind blown?
I'm going to just kind of move forward for the pleasure of Gene, and that is the speed of pain, post-human, and I Want to Disappear. All these are pretty solid songs, but I have to agree with Baco, is that the pure – that I'm saying that's odd about this is he's known as the evil incarnate, you know. But then you got a song, like I'm saying, that drugs were more evil. It's a total pop song. I don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me.
At this time, for sure, yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
I don't know if this came out right now that it would make that big of a impact.
Nope.
No, I don't like the vape, but the vape likes me.
I don't like Tide Pods, but Tide Pods loves me.
I still like the drugs, but the drugs like me. I still like the drugs. The drugs.
Anyway, what are your thoughts on this Baco? I think you already said them, but you want to summarize them.
I'm kicking it to Gene, man.
Yeah, kick it to Gene.
We're talking I don't like the drugs, baby.
It's, and you know, this is actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I may have heard this one before I went into to doing this. You know, there's a little bit of a funk vibe on this track. So it's,
yeah,
it's,
there
it's,
is. Yeah. Funky. You know what? Yeah, actually,
This whole album is very glam.
I have to jump in here real quick, Gene. I forgot to mention this. This one is basically like David Bowie's Fame, but with drugs.
This is better.
Oh, much better, because I hate that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That song blows goats.
You know, like
it does.
The previous tracks aren't so strong, like Dissociative, The Speed of Pain, and Posthuman Disappear. Yeah. So this one it's a little bit more of a standout as far as regarding those previous tracks that you mentioned earlier. But it's not as super strong for me. But I do like the lady singers that come out at the end of the song or towards the end of the song.
Right.
That just adds another really cool element to the song. So yeah, there's a lot going on in this album, and for me, it's not all good, but there's a little bit of, you know, you got your peaks and valleys, or you got your light and your shade. So that's one thing that's appealing to me with sometimes with albums is getting some of that mix.
Track length?
Oh, on this one, we got 5 minutes, a little over 5 minutes.
A little too long. Yeah, this is one of the you know, I have this whole checklist of bands. This is one of them that oddly I've never seen. But I know, Baco, you mentioned you have seen them. Gene, have you seen them?
Actually, I have. I kind of blanked this out until just now. I saw them at Ozfest when they got banned from Wisconsin and they had to
move
it.
You were at that one where they moved to the Metrodome.
Yep, to the Metrodome before they tore that piece.
98.
Down. Yes, 98.
What was that lineup for that? It was just Ozzy, Manson, and a bunch of other bands? Do you remember who else was there?
Slayer was there, right?
No, I don't think Slayer was there.
Pantera.
Yep, Cold Chamber.
That's a lineup.
Boy, there was a lot of bands on there, man. Power Man. I think Power Man was there. Machine Head, if I'm not mistaken. That's one thing. Ozfest was awesome because they had so many bands. And they were bringing new bands in. That's the first time I ever saw Slipknot. That's the first time I ever heard Slipknot.
Slipknot was actually on the next tour.
No, I'm sorry, in the next time, but I'm just talking regarding the Ozfest tours.
Oh, overall, yeah.
Yeah, those first 4 or 5 years were just so awesome as far as introducing me to new music. But I honestly do not remember much about the Marilyn Manson performance on that night.
I've seen them 3 times, never once intentionally. Well, by intentionally, I mean, like, I didn't buy tickets to go see Marilyn Manson. I got
he's like Cheap Trick to you.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. The first time I saw him was at an arena show on this tour, and that was it was supposed to be Hole opening, but they dropped out for something. And it was Nashville Pussy and Marilyn Manson.
Nice.
And my boss, for some reason, he had a connection somewhere, and they got free tickets. So him and his buddy went, and he gave me the other 2 tickets. So me and a friend went, and my boss, he's like one of those kind of like, I don't know, I call them faux Christians, where they're like Christian just in case. you know, it's like, and apparently, by the 3rd song, they were offended enough by Marilyn Manson, they walked up and left out.
This is your guy. This is your guy. This is your guy.
Just to kind of back what you're talking about, like the guy you work
you
with.
You want to footnote it, right?
I do. Like the guy that took off after the third song is there was a like an account that I had. He's actually a State Farm agent. He randomly had a copy of Queen of the Damned, which Marilyn Manson was on there, and he went on a rant about how he offended his sensibilities and that he was like the devil and stuff like that, and that it was like he liked these other tracks on the album, but he will skip over this every time because Marilyn Manson is pure evil. Anything to add to that, Baco?
It is weird because it's if you work with anybody that's like under the age of 30 or know people, it's hard to describe how real that passion was for that kind of stuff. Marilyn Manson was the last one that, as far as I know, like you said earlier, like he literally was the last artist that actually kind of kicked through and said and scared people religiously, like they freaked them out, like these people who like kind of casually go to church were worried about their kids listening to him.
Yeah, and I do have to say that after, like I told you, I was at the State Farm agent office, but I mentioned I like Marilyn Manson, my rates went up 25%. So any other thoughts on
Gene, come on, what do you got?
Boy, I got nothing. But I do feel you're right. I've been racking my brain trying to think if there's anybody that's made such an impact.
Right.
I mean, I know Slipknot got a lot of guff, but I don't think it was to the degree. I can't even say I don't think it was. I know it wasn't to the degree that Marilyn Manson got.
And plenty prior.
Right. Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, you go, goddamn, look at the 80s, man. The 80s alone was filled with villains all over the place. Yeah.
And now we have Ariana Grande licking donuts.
That is the, I guess, the benefit.
That's pretty much the Marilyn Manson of nowadays.
Can you do the whole path like you did for Tide Pods from Manson to Ariana Grande?
You want to try? Okay. You laugh, but I'm not kidding here, okay? It started with Marilyn Manson, then the internet, then MTV stopped showing any type of music at all. Then it was Tide Pods, then it was vaping, and then Ariana Grande is licking fucking donuts. Satan!
And I have to say, too, that going on to the whole controversy, that actually during the Columbine and everything like that, Manson actually stopped his tour for a bit. Like, at one point it was too much, and then came back, like, let the craziness die down for several months and then resumed the tour, like canceled tour dates. I can't even think of any artist that actually said, fuck it, I'm done. I'm canceling this.
I think we kind of glossed over what Gene actually said earlier. Ozfest was actually relocated from Wisconsin to Minnesota. It was supposed to be at the place that you and I saw Northern Invasion.
Wow.
They shoved it in a fucking football stadium that sucks because Wisconsin had a ban on Marilyn Manson, and that is a true story. And I that's the only reason I knew the year. I didn't go to the show.
Yeah, man. I mean, this album flows overall. Some of the songs are stronger. I don't know if you want to just hammer through these all the way to the
Let me ask you something real quick, Lewis. So what about the whole concept record? It was like two albums, like where half of it was supposed to be Omega and the Mechanical Animals. Do you know anything about that or not?
I do. I remember, and I can just say that whatever the concept was, is that side one was the concept where it was better than side two.
Okay, that's a great concept.
Yeah, I will tell you also that there is some kind of I'll just call it revisionist bullshittery to make it more of a mystique. But just so you understand, that this was supposed to be the middle, the second act of a trilogy that goes in reverse. Supposedly, he said that Hollywood was the first part of the story, and then this was the middle, and then actually Antichrist Superstar was a conclusion. I call bullshit on that.
Total revisionist history.
Yeah, okay, but that's what he said it was. I'm like, yeah, that's what you did. You're fucking George Lucas.
Because
you never
heard that until that record.
Right. Model 15, user-friendly, fundamentally loathsome, Last Day on Earth. Any comments on this, Gene?
Not so much the previous you mentioned, but the Last Day on Earth was a track that I kind of dug.
Yep.
Everything that kind of preceded it was there was some kind of some garbage in there. New Model 15, not so much.
Right.
User friendly. Oh God, I could have done without that one. And I don't know if Trent Reznor didn't get a writing credit on that track, because that sounds like a Nine Inch Nails song, and I'm not a fan of Nine Inch Nails, but that is.
Yeah, we should mention that real quick though, that Nine Inch Nail, that Trent Reznor was kind of his
mentor,
or whatever, his muse or whatever like that for Antichrist. And then he completely like jetted past him. It was like, and then they had a huge rift. I think they had a falling out, mostly because he became much more popular than he did, I believe. But I agree. The Last Day on Earth.
That'll do it.
Yeah, The Last Day on Earth is a solid track, which leads nicely into Coma White, which is one of my favorite tracks on the album, and I think a nice, just basically conclusion.
Let me say something real quick.
Please.
Because isn't this is the last record with Twiggy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and there is pretty much, I don't know, what do you call it? Like when everybody concedes a certain point. There has never been a great Manson record or song after this album.
Nope. Well, there's a few on, and I don't know if he's co-writing. On Hollywood, which was my consideration for this whole series, there are three or four what I consider great Manson songs on the next album, and that is it. There's not a single song past that.
Okay.
And I don't know if he had – and I'll say that maybe, just kind of like you're talking about Highway to Hell, Back in Black, that maybe some of these things were written a little bit before that album. You know what I'm saying?
And Twiggy eventually came back for a little bit, right?
Did he? I have no idea.
Okay. Well, who cares?
I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just like that's what I'm saying. Like, I picked this album because I dig the album, but overall for his career, not that bad.
I'm glad you brought it up because it's an album that I'd kind of forgotten, but it's actually really good. But much like we talked, it's very front heavy.
Yep, exactly. You want to get out of here so you guys go to sleep? Jesus Christ, it's like 1:18 in the morning.
All right, so before we go, what's the song you're going to make love to?
Gene, you're first.
Great Big White World.
Damn it.
Oh, so you're racist. For me, I'm going to go with Nashville Pussy.
All right, well, I'm going to go with The Speed of Pain.
Have you ever heard the mix, The Speed of Sweet Pain?
All right, you guys want to get here? Please let me get out of this basement.
Of course. Rock's not dead.
But it's as hollow as the Owen God.
Standing
Welcome to Cobras on Fire. I'm Gene, and I'm joined by the mechanical cannon, loose cannon.
I would slow it down a little bit. Like, welcome to Cobras on Fire.
You know what, Gene? I would actually slow it down. No, I would slow it down like this. Welcome to Cobras on Fire. And then we'll just speed you up.
Oh, there you go.
Nah.
Welcome to Cobras on Fire.
Can you do back masking?
Jesus Christ.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.